2-year-old James Bulger was walking with his mother Denise at the New Strand Shopping Center in Liverpool, England. They went to the butcher at 3:40 p.m., where she took her eyes off of him momentarily, and James was led away by 10-year-olds Robert Thompson and John Benevels. His body was found on the railway 2.5 miles away in Walton 2 days after his abduction. This case led to the conviction of the youngest murderers in modern British history. Welcome to history's biggest villains. CCTV at the New Strand Shopping Center in Bootle on February 12, 1993 showed Thompson and Venables casually observing children, apparently selecting a target. The boys were playing truant from their local primary school, which they did regularly. Throughout the day, Thompson and Venables were seen shoplifting various items, including candy, batteries, a troll doll, and a can of blue Humble modeling paint. One of the boys later revealed that they were planning to abduct a child, lead him to the busy road alongside the shopping center, and push him into the oncoming traffic. That same afternoon, James Bulger from Kirkby went with his mother Denise to the New Strand Shopping Center. Whilst in the A.R. Timms butcher shop on the lower floor of the center at around 3:40, Denise, who had let go of her son's hand to pay for her shopping, realized that her son was missing. Thompson and Venables had approached James Bulger, took him by the hand, and led him out of the shopping center. This moment was caught on CCTV at 3:42 p.m. Thompson and Venables took Bulger to the Leeds and Liverpool Canal, around a quarter of a mile from the New Strand Shopping Center, where they dropped him on his head and he suffered injuries to his face. The boys joked about pushing Bulger in the canal. An eyewitness said that when he saw Bulger at the canal, the boy was quote-unquote crying his eyes out. The boys went on a 2.5 mile or 4 kilometer walk across Liverpool. They were seen by around 38 people, but most bystanders did nothing to intervene. Two people challenged Thompson and Venables, but they either claimed Bulger was their brother or that he was lost, and that they were taking him to a police station. Eventually, the boys arrived in Walton. With Walton Lane Police Station across the road, they hesitated, then led Bulger up a steep bank to a railway line near the former Walton and Anfield Railway Station, close to Anfield Cemetery. One of the boys threw the blue paint that they had shoplifted earlier into Bulger's left eye. They kicked him, stomped on him, threw bricks and stones at him, and placed batteries in his mouth. Finally, the boys dropped a 10-kilogram railway fish plate on Bulger. He sustained 10 skull fractures as a result of the bar striking his head. Pathologist Alan Williams said that Bulger suffered so many injuries, 42 in total, that none could be identified as the fatal blow. Thompson Venables laid the boy's body across the railway tracks and weighted his head down with rubble, hoping that the train would hit him and his death would be ruled an accident. After they left the scene, his body was cut in half by a train. Bulger's body was discovered by a group of children 2 days later. A forensic pathologist testified that Bulger had died before he was struck by the train. Police also suspect that he was abused since his shoes, socks, pants, and underwear were removed. The police quickly found low-resolution images of Bulger's abduction from the New Strand Shopping Center by two unidentified boys. The railway embankment upon which his body had been discovered was soon adorned with hundreds of bunches of flowers. The family of one boy, who was detained for questioning but subsequently released, had to flee the city due to threats from vigilantes. The breakthrough came when a woman, upon seeing slightly enhanced images of the two boys on national television, recognized Venables and remembered seeing him playing truant with Thompson in the Bootle area that day. She contacted police, and the boys were arrested. The suspect's age came as a shock to investigating officers headed by Detective Superintendent Albert Kirby of Merseyside Police. Early press reports and police statements had referred to Bulger being seen with quote-unquote two youths. This was suggesting that the killers were teenagers. The ages of the boys being difficult to determine from the images that were captured on CCTV. Forensic tests confirmed that both boys had the same blue paint on their clothing as found on Bulger's body. Both had blood on their shoes. The blood on Thompson's shoe was matched to Bulger's through DNA tests. A pattern of bruising on Bulger's right cheek matched the features of the upper part of a shoe worn by Thompson. A paint mark in the toe cap of one of Venables' shoes indicated that he must have used some force when he kicked Bulger. Thompson is said to have asked police whether Bulger had been taken to the hospital to get him alive again. The boys were each charged with the murder of James Bulger on February 20th, 1993, and appeared at Southampton Youth Court on February 22nd, where they were remanded in custody to await trial. In the aftermath of their arrest and throughout the media accounts of their trial, the boys were referred to as Child A and Child B. awaiting trial, they were held in secure units where they would eventually be sentenced to be detained at Her Majesty's pleasure. Up to 500 protesters gathered at the magistrate's court in the metropolitan borough of Sefton during the boys' initial court appearances. The parents of the accused were moved to different parts of the country and assumed new identities following death threats from vigilantes. The full trial opened at Sessions House Pressing on November 1st of 1993, conducted as an adult trial with the accused in the dock away from their parents. The boys denied the charges of murder, abduction, and attempted abduction. The attempted abduction charge was related to an incident at the New Strand Shopping Center earlier on February 12th, the day of Bulger's death. Thompson and Venables had attempted to lead away another two-year-old boy, but had been prevented by the boy's mother. Each boy sat in view of the court on raised chairs so that they could see out of the dock designed for adults, and were accompanied by two social workers and guards. Although they were separated from their parents, they were within touching distance when their families attended the trial. News stories reported the demeanor of the defendants. These aspects were later criticized by the European Court of Human Rights, which ruled in 1999 that they had not received a fair trial by being tried in public in an adult court. At the trial, the lead prosecution counsel, Richard Henriques, successfully rebutted the principle of doli in capax, which presumes that young children cannot be held legally responsible for their actions. Thompson and Venables were considered by the court to be capable of mischievous discretion, meaning an ability to act with criminal intent, as they were mature enough to understand what they were doing was seriously wrong. A child psychiatrist, Eileen Vizard, who interviewed Thompson before the trial, was asked in court whether he would know the difference between right or wrong, that it was wrong to take a young child away from his mother, and that it was wrong to cause injury to a child. Vizard replied, "If the issue is on the balance of probabilities, I think I can answer it with certainty." Vizard also said that Thompson was suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder after the attack on Bulger. Right. Susan Bailey, the home office's forensic psychiatrist who interviewed Venables, said unequivocally that he knew the difference between right and wrong. Thompson and Venables didn't speak during the trial, and the case against them was based to a large extent on more than 20 hours of tape-recorded police interviews with the boys, which were played back in court. Thompson was considered to have taken a leading role in the abduction process, though it was Venables who had apparently initiated the idea of taking Bulger to the railway line. Venables later described how Bulger seemed to like him, holding his hand and allowing him to pick him up on the meandering journey to the scene of his death. Lawrence Lee, who was the solicitor of Venables during the trial, later said that Thompson was one of the most frightening children he had seen and compared him to the Pied Piper. After his appearances in court, Venables would strip off his clothes saying, "I can smell James like a baby smell." The prosecution admitted a number of exhibits during the trial, including a box of 27 bricks, a blood-stained stone, Bulger's underwear, and the rusty iron bar described as a railway fish plate. The pathologist spent 33 minutes outlining the injuries sustained by Bulger. Many of those to his legs had been inflicted after he was stripped from the waist down. His brain damage was extensive and included a hemorrhage. The boys, by then aged 11, were both found guilty of Bulger's murder at Preston Court on November 24, 1993. Becoming the youngest convicted murderers of the 20th century. Justice Moreland told Thompson and Venables that they had committed a crime of unparalleled evil and barbarity. "In my judgment, your conduct was both cunning and very wicked." Moreland sentenced them to be detained at Her Majesty's pleasure, with a recommendation that they should be kept in custody for very, very many years to come, recommending a minimum of 8 years. At the close of the trial, the judge lifted reporting restrictions and allowed the names of the killers to be released, saying, "I did this because the public interest overrode the interests of the defendants. There was a need for an informed public debate on crimes committed by young children." Shortly after the trial, and after the judge had recommended a minimum sentence of 8 years, Lord Taylor of Gosford, the Lord Chief Justice, recommended that the two boys should serve a minimum of 10 years, which would have made them eligible for release in February 2003 at the age of 20. The editors of The Sun handed in a petition bearing nearly 280,000 signatures to Michael Howard, the Home Secretary, in a bid to increase the time spent by both boys in custody. This campaign was successful, and Howard announced in July 1994 that the boys would be kept in custody for a minimum of 15 years. meaning they would not be considered for release until February 2008, by which time they would be 25 years old. Lord Donelson criticized Howard's intervention, describing the increased tariff as institutionalized vengeance by a politician playing to the gallery. The increased minimum term was overturned in 1997 by the House of Lords that ruled it, quote-unquote, unlawful for the Home Secretary to decide on minimum sentences for young offenders. The High Court of Justice and European Court of Human Rights have since ruled that although the Parliament may set minimum and maximum terms for individual categories of crime, it is the responsibility of the trial judge, with the benefit of all the evidence and argument from both prosecution and defense counsel, to determine the minimum term in individual criminal cases. Tony Blair, then the Shadow Home Secretary, gave a speech in Wellingborough during which he said, "We hear of crimes so horrific they provoke anger and disbelief in equal proportions. These are the ugly manifestations of a society that is becoming unworthy of their name." Prime Minister John Major said that society needs to condemn a little more and understand a little less. The trial judge, Mr. Justice Moreland, stated that exposure to violent videos might have encouraged the actions of Thompson and Minables. This was disputed by David McLean, the Minister of State at the Home Office at the time, who said that police found no evidence linking the case with quote-unquote video nasties. After the trial, Thompson was held at the Barton Moss Secure Care Center in Manchester. Venables was detained in Vardy House, a small 8-bedded unit at Red Bank's Secure Unit in St. Helens on Merseyside. These locations were not publicly known until after the boys' release. Details of the boys' lives were recorded twice daily on running sheets and signed by the member of staff who had written them. The records were stored at the units and copied to officials in Whitehall. The boys were taught to conceal their real names and the crimes they had committed. Venable's parents regularly visited their son at Red Bank, just as Thompson's mother did every 3 days at Barton Moss. The boys received education and rehabilitation, I guess, despite initial problems. Venable's is said to eventually made good progress at Red Bank, resulting in him being kept there for the full 8 years, despite the facility only being a short-stay remand unit. Both boys were reported to suffer post-traumatic stress disorder, and Venables in particular told of experiencing nightmares and flashbacks of the murder. In 1999, lawyers for Thompson and Venables appealed to the European Court of Human Rights that the boys' trial had not been impartial, since they were too young to follow proceedings and understand an adult court. The court dismissed their claim that the trial was inhuman and that degrading treatment, but upheld their claim that they were denied a fair trial by the nature of the court proceedings. The court also held that the Home Secretary's intervention has led to a highly charged atmosphere, which resulted in an unfair judgment. On March 15, 1999, the court in Strasbourg ruled by 14 votes to 5 that there had been a violation of Article 6 of the European Convention on Human Rights regarding the fairness of the trial of Thompson and Venables, stating, "The public trial process in an adult court must be regarded in the case of an 11-year-old as a severely intimidating procedure." In September 1999, Bulger's parents appealed to the European Court of Human Rights but failed to persuade the court that a victim of a crime has a right to be involved in determining the sentence of the perpetrator. The European court case led to the new Lord Chief Justice, Lord Wolfe, reviewing the minimum sentence. In October 2000, he recommended that the tariff be reduced from 10 to 8 years, adding that Her Majesty's Young Offender Institution was a corrosive atmosphere for the juveniles. In June 2001, after a 6-month review, the parole board ruled that the boys were no longer a threat to public safety and could be released, as their minimum tariff had expired in February of that year. Home Secretary David Blunkett approved the decision, and they were released a few weeks later on lifelong license after serving 8 years. It is reported that both boys were given new identities and moved to secret locations under a witness protection style program. This was supported by the fabrication of passports, national insurance numbers, qualification certificates, and medical records. Blunkett added his own conditions to their license and insisted on being sent daily updates on the boys' actions. Terms of their release included the following. They were not allowed to contact each other or Bulger's family. They were prohibited from visiting the Merseyside region. Curfews may be imposed on them, and they must report to probation officers. If they breached the rules and were deemed a risk to the public, they could be returned to prison. An injunction was imposed on the media after the trial, preventing the publication of details about Thompson and Venables. The worldwide injunction was kept in force following their release on parole, so their new identities and locations could not be published. In 2001, Blunkett stated, "This injunction was granted because there was a real and strong possibility that their lives would be at risk if their identities became known." I'm sorry, I just have to stop this right here. You're protecting the identity of the people that murdered a kid, but you're preventing people from speaking on them. Like, why are you... Several people were arrested for attempting to disclose the identities of Thompson and Venables. The Manchester Evening News published details that suggested the names of the secure institutions in which the pairs were housed in breach of the injunction against publicity that had been renewed early in 2001. In December that year, the paper was fined £30,000 for contempt of court in order to pay a cost of £120,000. On July 14, 2016, a woman from Margate in Kent was jailed for 3 years after sending Twitter messages to Bulger's mother in which she posed as one of his killers and as Bulger's ghost. On October 25th, a man was jailed for 26 weeks for stalking Denise Fergus. He had previously received a police warning for stalking her in 2008. On January 31st, 2019, a man and a woman pleaded guilty to 8 contempt of court offenses at the High Court after they admitted to posting photos on social media that they claimed identified Venables. Both received suspended prison sentences. In January 2020, a 53-year-old woman from Ammanford in South Wales received a prison sentence of 8 months, suspended for 15 months. In November 2017, she had published an alleged photograph of Venables on Facebook with the advice, "Share this as much as possible." Shortly after his 2001 release, when aged 17, Venables was alleged to have had relations with a woman who had worked at the Red Bank Secure Unit where he was held. The female staff member was suspended for sexual misconduct. She never returned to work at Red Bank. Venables began living independently in March 2002. Sometime afterward, he began a relationship with a woman who had a 5-year-old child. It is not known whether Venables had begun downloading child abuse images at the time of dating the woman, although he denies having ever met the child. In 2005, when Venables was 23, his probation officer met another girlfriend of his who was 17. After a number of young girlfriends, it was presumed that Venables was having a delayed adolescence. After a period of apparent reduced supervision, Venables began obsessively drinking, taking drugs, and downloading child abuse images, as well as visiting Merseyside, which was a breach of his license. In 2008, a new probation officer said he spent a great deal of leisure time playing video games and on the internet. In September of that year, Venables was arrested on suspicion of affray following a fight outside a nightclub. He claimed he was acting in self-defense, and the charges were later dropped after he agreed to go on an alcohol awareness course. 3 months later, he was found to be in possession of cocaine. He was subjected to a curfew on 2 occasions. Venables revealed his true identity to a friend. On March 2, 2010, the Ministry of Justice revealed that Venables had been returned to prison for an unspecified violation of the terms of his license of release. Justice Secretary Jack Straw stated that Venables had been returned to prison because of extremely serious allegations and stated that he was unable to give further details of the reasons for John Venables' return to custody because it was not in the public interest to do so. Not in the public interest? Who do these people... Okay. On March 7th, media reports said that he had been accused of child pornography offenses. In a statement to the House of Commons on March 8, 2010, Straw reiterated that it was not in the interest of justice to reveal the reason why Venables had been returned to custody. Baroness Butler Sloss, the judge who made the decision to grant Venables anonymity in 2001, warned that Venables could be killed if his identity was revealed. Bulger's mother, Denise Fergus, said she was angry that the parole board didn't tell her that Venables had been returned to prison and called for his anonymity to be removed if he was charged with a crime. A spokesperson for the Ministry of Justice said that there was a worldwide injunction against publication of either killers, a location, or new identity. On June 21st, 2010, Venables was charged with possession and distribution of indecent images of children. It was alleged that he had downloaded 57 indecent images of children over a 12-month period to February 2010 and had allowed other people to access the files through a peer-to-peer network. Venables faced 2 charges under the Protection of Children Act. On July 23rd, Venables appeared at a court hearing at the Old Bailey via a video link, visible only to the judge hearing the case. He pleaded guilty to charges of downloading and distributing child pornography and was sentenced to 2 years imprisonment. At the court hearing, it emerged that Venables had posed in online chat rooms as 35-year-old Dawnie Smith, a married woman from Liverpool, who boasted about abusing her 8-year-old daughter in the hope of obtaining further child abuse material. Venables had contacted his probation officer in February 2010, fearing that his new identity had been compromised at his place of work. When the officer arrived at his flat, Venables was attempting to remove or destroy the hard drive of his computer with a knife and a tin opener. The officer's suspicions were aroused, and the computer was taken away for examination, leading to the discovery of the child abuse material, which included children as young as 2 years old. Clearly this guy has a problem. The judge, Mr. Justice David Bean, ruled that Venables' new identity could not be revealed, but the media were allowed to report that he had been living in Cheshire at the time of his arrest. The High Court also heard that Venables had been arrested on suspicion of a fray in September 2008 following a drunken street fight with another man. In November 2010, a review of the National Probation Service's handling of the case by David O'Mahon found that the probation officers could not have prevented Venables from downloading child abuse material. Venables was eligible for parole on July 2011. On June 27, 2011, the parole board decided that he would remain in custody and that his parole would not be considered again for at least another year. On May 4, 2011, it is reported that Venables would once again be given a new identity following what was described as a serious security breach, which revealed an identity that he had been using before his 2010 imprisonment. Details of the breach could not be reported for legal reasons. A spokesperson for the Ministry of Justice commented, "Such a change in identity is extremely rare and granted only when the police assess there is clear and credible evidence of a sustained threat to an offender's life on the release of the community. The incident occurred after a man from Exeter posted photographs of on a website devoted to identifying pedophiles, allegedly showing Venables as an adult and revealing his name. In November 2011, it was reported that officials had decided that Venables would stay in prison for the foreseeable future, as he would be likely to reveal his true identity if released." Yes, that's the only reason why you want him in prison, because he's gonna tell people who he is. Right. Like, come on, man. A Ministry of Justice spokesperson declined to comment on the reports. On July 4th, 2013, it is reported that the Parole Board of England or Wales had approved the release of Venables. On September 3rd, 2013, it is reported that Venables had been released from prison. Not surprisingly, on November 23rd, 2017, it is reported that Venables had again been recalled to prison for possession of child abuse imagery. The Ministry of Justice declined to comment on the reports. On January 5th, 2018, Venables was charged with unspecified offenses relating to indecent images of children. On February 7th, Venables pleaded guilty to possession of indecent images of children for the second time. He pleaded guilty via video link to three charges of making indecent images of children and one of possessing a quote-unquote pedophile manual, including advice to would-be child abusers, including instructions on grooming and evading detection. He admitted being in possession of almost 1,200 images and was sentenced to 3 years and 4 months in prison. In September 2020, he was denied parole. He was scheduled for another parole hearing in October 2022, and it was postponed for at least 3 months. On March 4, 2019, Bulger's father, Ralph, lost a legal challenge to lift the lifelong order protecting Venables' anonymity. Judge Andrew McFarlane turned down the request, saying that the uniquely notorious nature of the case meant that there is a strong possibility, if not a probability, that if his identity were known, he would be pursued, resulting in grave and possibly fatal consequences. In late 2019, it was reported that British officials had considered resettling Venables in Canada, Australia, or New Zealand due to the high cost behind protecting his anonymity. Maybe it's not worth it. British authorities had reportedly spent £65,000 in legal fees to keep Venables' identity a secret. In response to media coverage, Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern remarked that Venables would need an exemption under New Zealand's Immigration Act, and that he should not bother applying. That is all we know about this case to this point, but bro, I need to say this. I don't understand why it's such a concern for his safety when he's a convicted murderer and he's been caught multiple times with images on his computer, so he's obviously not rehabilitated. Why is it such an effort to protect his identity? You're talking about, oh, somebody's gonna do something to him. Don't you think his family needs justice? You don't think his parents deserve to really see justice for their son? Because, in all honesty, the perpetrators only got 8 years. You only got 8 years for the murder of a toddler. You got 8 years, and the government is spending money to protect your identity? Are you serious? You're putting people in jail for trying to expose him, but yet he gets caught with 1,200 images on his computer, and he's given three years probation. Multiple probationary hearings. Meanwhile, Thompson is probably living his life in some other country, acting like none of this ever happened, under a new identity, got a brand new life. The handling of this case was poor. These men should still be in jail. I mean, Venables is in jail now, but both of them still should be in jail for what they did to this little boy. His mother is going to think about this day for the rest of her life. She took her eyes off her son for a second, and her son is gone. And now the people who did it to her son get to walk around with new identities, and now it's illegal to report on them. It's illegal to say anything about them. We can't report on them. You can't even put their pictures up online of their adult pictures because it'll be illegal. Rest in peace to James Bulger. And I feel sorry for his family that they had to go through all this. And I feel really weird how they're being so protective of this guy. What does he have? Like, what is so special about him that they need to protect him so much? Why are they so worried about him getting harmed by other people? But yet, he can do this to a little boy, and yet he only gets in jail for 8 years because of it. You have people defending him. They're overlooking the fact that this little boy was killed. But it doesn't matter, because obstruction of justice. They didn't receive a fair trial. You didn't expect people to be angry at this? It was a hostile environment. What did you expect? That's all I got to say. But I'm out, bro. I can't even talk that much about this, man. This really just grinds my gears. But thank you for watching. If you enjoyed this, leave a like. Hit that subscribe button if you're new to the channel. Thank you so much for the support. Again, rest in peace to James Bulger. I feel sorry for his family that they got to go through this. Hopefully, the government comes to their senses and lifts this stupid ban and expose these people for who they are. But in other words, I'm out. Peace.